All right, welcome to this edition of ACFE Podcast. I'm John Gill. I'm your host for this edition, and I have with me Bethmara Kessler. Bethmara has been a CFE since when?
Many years now, sometime in the 90s, I believe, or maybe in the early 2000s.
So she's been a member of the ACFE for a while, and so we've invited her here to talk about embezzlement schemes. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
We're recording this at the ACFE's 24th Annual Global Fraud Conference, and so we're having a good time here. And so wherever you're listening right now, I hope you can make it to the next one the next year, because it is a great event and a great time. And so the paper she's presenting is, she's looking at three embezzlement cases and read it, where she's going through those and then coming up with some tips and some ideas about how you can use that in your own practice. And so that's what we're going to kind of be going through today. The first one is an interesting case. I remember reading a little bit about it in the newspapers when it happened. It's the case of Rita Crunwell, who was an employee of the city of Dixon. So give us kind of a summary of the facts of that case and why you find it interesting.
So the first thing just to note is that the city of Dixon was the home of Ronald Reagan, the boyhood home of his. And one of the things that he was famous for talking about was that we must trust but verify. And this was very, very interesting because it was a classic case of a city trusting but not verifying. So the facts of the case is Rita is, she's about 60 years old now. And she had started as pretty much a child. She was about 17 years old when she had started interning for the city of Dixon. And when she graduated college, she ended up with a full-time job at the city of Dixon. And very, very quickly, her boss, who was the treasurer comptroller, ended up leaving, and Rita ended up getting promoted to treasurer and comptroller. And that was back sometime in 1991. She had worked there for over 20 years. And what happened was, very early in her career at the city of Dixon, once she got the comptroller treasurer role, she ended up setting up a fictitious bank account, or actually a bank account that was purportedly to be in the name of the city of Dixon, but she had herself as the only signatory on that account. And that account she had set up back in 1991, and it was with this small bank. And over time, banks kept acquiring banks, and eventually it was a Fifth Third Bank that the account was held in, where it turned out a lot of the city of Dixon accounts were held. And what happened was Rita had, she got 4 weeks vacation as being an employee for the city of Dixon. So she made about $80,000 a year. One of her hobbies, which was actually a side business she had, was world-class quarter horse breeding. And she was known for many years as one of the top breeders of quarter horses, and had won all kinds of championships, and had several hundred horses that she bred on her farm. And so what she did, the 4 weeks vacation, paid vacation that the city of Dixon gave her, wasn't enough. And what she would do is she would take additional vacation to be able to go to her horse shows and take it as unpaid vacation. So the city of Dixon, who had this woman who was this trusted employee, they were very, very grateful, because instead of $80,000 a year, they were paying about $60,000 a year for this great treasurer and comptroller that everybody loved. And what happened was, back in 2011, she was on one of these extended vacations that she wasn't getting paid, and there was a meeting coming up with the city council, and a treasurer's report needed to be completed. So there was a city clerk who ended up kind of filling in for Rita. Her name was, Kathy Swanson. She's the hero in the case. Kathy was trying to put together the treasurer's report, and she wanted to make sure she had all of the bank accounts. So what she did was she reached out to the banks that she knew the city had accounts with and said, can you send me the latest statements? And she ended up getting the statements from the Fifth Third Bank, and there was an account that she didn't recognize as being from the city of Dixon. And when she was looking at the account, there were a couple of deposits in the month of September, which is, I think it was September 2011, that this all happened. So there were about $200,000 to $300,000 deposits at a time. And there were 84 checks for about $360,000 and about 40 withdrawals, but none of them looked like city business, so she didn't know what they were. So she ended up literally walking into the mayor's office to show it to him to see if he knew anything about the accounts, and he knew nothing about the account. So after he says that he got sick to his stomach when he saw the accounts, he ended up contacting the FBI, and the FBI got involved in kind of looking into the case. What was really interesting about it is because it went on for so long, the FBI started investigating while Rita was out, and what they had asked Kathy and the mayor to do was allow her to come back, not let on that anything was going on, and actually let her just go about her business so that they could monitor her activities. So they did that for about 5.5 or 6 months. And in that period of time, she put about $3.5 million, I think it was like $3.2 million into her pocket. And the city of Dixon, their operating funds were about $2.6 million for that same period of time. So she was literally putting more money in her pocket than than the city of Dixon was actually paying in expenses. And there was a sidebar for a period of time where the city was so cash strapped that they couldn't meet their operating expenses at one point. So she borrowed some money from the police and the firemen's pension fund to actually cover the expenses for a month, and then ended up putting that money back within a reasonable period of time, and they never ended up pursuing that. But it's just a fascinating case how it could go on for so long and nobody asked the right questions in order to, kind of to detect this, because the city was just operating at a loss consistently, and I can't imagine that with the kind of money she stole, which, by the way, $53.7 million, that nobody should have noticed.
How long did it go on?
It went on from 1991 till her arrest in 2012. So it went on for well over 20 years. And what was interesting is she grew up in the city of Dixon. So it's about 16,000 people. So people knew her in town. And she didn't hide her wealth over time. So she has this $80,000 a year job, not even claiming the $80,000 because she was on vacation. And her lifestyle was really of the rich and famous. She had extravagant parties and would kind of flaunt it, didn't hide it from colleagues, would invite them to her parties, had horse farms and all kinds of, she had very, very eclectic taste. The U.S. Marshals ended up having to try to sell her stuff, and they were only getting pennies on the dollar. A matter of fact, so she ended up getting 19 and a half years when she had pled guilty to the fraud, and she's serving time right now in a minimum security women's federal prison in Minnesota. And when the marshals were trying to dissolve of her assets, it was just, some of the things were just really, really very specific and kind of bizarre. So she had all of these kind of horse type themed things in her house. So saddled bar stools and six shooter chandeliers and all kinds of just weird stuff that was very, very specific. So they only estimate they'll get about 1/5 of the total loss for the city of Dixon. So only about $10 million recovery.
Did the city ever conduct any audits during this period?
Clifton Allen Larson were the auditors for many, many years, and there's been some debate about what role Clifton Allen Larson really had as the city's auditors. They claim that at one point they were no longer the city's auditors. They did the compilations of the financial statements for them, which is different in terms of their responsibility. So the company that ended up becoming the auditor was a smaller firm than Clifton Allen Larson, and neither one of them was really asking the kinds of questions that they needed to ask or looking at backup and documents in a way that they would have detected the fraud, and that was incredibly sad. So they were, just getting paid to, kind of go through the motions of doing an audit but not really digging deep enough.
I know some states, they have a state audit department or a municipal audit division in the state that will come in, and they actually from time to time look at city books and records. Did Illinois have anything like that?
Yeah, Illinois did. And the interesting thing is those audits aren't going to detect fraud necessarily. They're looking for compliance type things. And, it's very, very different when you're doing an audit that looks for compliance versus an audit that looks for fraud. And, with all due respect to the auditors, also it wasn't their job to necessarily look for fraud. They had to think about the risks in terms of whether there were risks that would lead to a material misstatement due to fraud. And quite honestly, the segregation of duties or lack of them should have been a red flag for them, because Rita pretty much was responsible for all of the city's finances and had, you know, custody of transactions from beginning to end. That should have kind of raised a flag, but the audits probably were not designed in a way that would have detected anything.
So all of the money that she took from this bank account that she created, and it was in a name similar to the city?
The account was, when she had originally set it up, it was the Reserve Sewer Capital Development Account. So it was called the RSCDA. Just want to get the acronym in the right direction. And she was the only signatory for it. When she ended up getting the checks kind of printed for that account, she had the account listed as care of Rita Crunwell. So if she was using checks out of that account to pay for things, it didn't look strange, because nobody knew what RSCDA was, and it was care of Rita Crunwell, so it looked like it was her account. But what she was doing is she was taking these money market accounts that were legitimate city accounts that, you know, all kinds of things were going into, money that the state of Illinois was funding, tax dollars, all that type of stuff. And she was wiring them into another capital development account that they actually had. I think that one was either at U.S. Bank or at Fifth Third Bank. But she was wiring the money into that account. And then what she would do is she would write checks out of that account that she was wiring everything into, and those checks would be payable to treasurer. So she would create phony invoices. People who have looked at those invoices as part of the investigation said that she didn't do a very good job of making them look like legitimate invoices, but they were allegedly from the state of Illinois, and they were kind of invoices that she would then supposedly have to make payable from the city to the state of Illinois to treasurer. So she was taking those treasurer checks and depositing them into her personal account and then withdrawing the money from there. But in addition to that, she was also skimming money. So I think over time it was about $800,000 of checks that were made out to the city of Dixon that she wasn't depositing into the city of Dixon account. She was depositing them directly into her RSCDA account. And then she wasn't being she wasn't hiding anything in terms of the money she was taking out of that RSCDA account. She was paying her Amex bills, writing checks out of it, making withdrawals. I think at the very, very end, it was about, 84 checks and 40 withdrawals in the course of a month. And it was just pretty much her personal piggy bank.
A lot of organizations, both public and private, as long as everything's going fine, everybody's getting paid, the expenses are being paid, nobody really questions anything. But in this case, I mean, they were near bankruptcy at one point, and you said they had to borrow from another account just to pay bills. It seems like at that time, someone would have started looking at, well, why are we underwater here and what's going on? Do you know if anybody, city council or
yes.
mayor?
So city council, from what I understand, not highly compensated people in terms of, these are side jobs, they're not full-time jobs for individuals. And the city had been, the mayor said it's pretty much the city had been cash-strapped for some period of time, so they weren't allowed to raise property taxes, they weren't getting as much money from the state as they used to get. I think some of the medical benefits and things, the rates were starting to go higher. So there were a lot of plausible reasons that Rita and others could use to describe why the city was always in the red. If it was a city or a municipality where there was substantial revenue coming in, or there were ideas and things that would generate increased revenue and then they didn't see it happening, that would have been a different story. But they had been operating, very, very cash poor for a long period of time. The reality is going back, I wonder how cash poor they truly were. Because just looking, like I said, at those last 5.5 to 6 months that the FBI was monitoring the activity, she was, stealing considerably in excess, over 100% of what the city bills were. So I think in just a lot of cases, there was a lot of trust placed in Rita because everybody knew her. They knew her family. They watched her grow up. She wasn't a stranger to the town. I could imagine in a small town of 16,000 people that they wouldn't trust easily. But, you know, once you had, folks trust, that they probably let it go to the extreme.
And you say she didn't attempt to hide her wealth, and she was affluent and lived affluently. Mm-hmm. Why didn't more people ask questions about, well, where's the money coming from?
Well, it's an interesting question because Rita's not the only woman who has been found guilty of major embezzlement that's in the horse circuit. There was another case last year where Melissa King had actually stolen about a large sum of money. It was in the $40 to $50 million range, a little less than Rita. I think it was $40 million range, from the Sandhog Union, which is the folks that do the bridges and tunnels in New York City. So she administered three funds there and ended up stealing. She was being paid over $500,000 a year for not a lot of work, and she ended up stealing a considerable amount of money and had also been very affluent and very much on the horse circuit. I think what happens is, in the situation with Rita, is that the wealth doesn't come instantaneously. So I don't think she went from kind of zero to glamour in a heartbeat. But I think what she did was, as she was starting to build her business, she had folks convinced that it was actually a money-making proposition. And I don't know tons about the horse breeding business, but from what I've been able to gather and understand, it's quite a very expensive proposition, where even doing some of the things that Rita was doing, which is she was doing stud breeding and things like that, it doesn't generate the kind of money that supports the maintenance and care of the horses and the ranches. Some of the things that she ended up buying with the money were even just the vehicles that would transport these horses. And those things go for over $250,000. And she had, lavish motorhomes and things so she can go to the different events. And in one of her homes, which was one of these Western-themed homes, she had an entire room dedicated to all the trophies and awards that the horses had won over the years.
So let's kind of go through some of the things, looking at this case, where were the mistakes made?
The first mistake was substituting internal controls for trust. There weren't a lot of folks that had the ability or desire to have the kind of financial oversight that would dig into the numbers deeply just to have kind of a verification and kind of a check and balance. So you had a situation where there weren't great segregation of duties. You had somebody who had, total custody of transactions and the ability to be in control of all the finances. And there really wasn't anybody who kick the tires. In hindsight, so this Kathy Swanson, who was the city clerk, she could have potentially have been used as a check and balance over time. They could have created some situation where there at least would have been, a verification or some kind of thing like that. I think that, not to criticize the folks in Dixon, but, I can't imagine that after, quarter after quarter, year after year of hearing all of the excuses for why the city isn't making money, and why they're so cash strapped, that somebody really didn't look for additional analysis or have a third party come in and actually do some kind of review that would help verify their, verify the situation. They probably couldn't afford it, but in the end, they couldn't afford not to do it, because now, even with the money that the U.S. Marshals are getting back, they're still going to be out over $40 million, which is, it's just wrong. From an audit perspective, I think about the external auditors, I think about the folks who are looking at the books. There were wire transfers and money that was moving between accounts. She did not use the same account all the time to move the money into this capital development account, but there was one account, the capital development account, where all this money was getting wired into. Kind of looking at that as the funding account for a lot of their payments, as an auditor, I think, the auditor should have been looking at what is the stuff that's coming into this account and kind of what does it look like and then where's it going. So a lot of these checks, the treasurer checks, if somebody would have looked at those checks, the backup allegedly did not look that much like the stuff that was coming out of legitimately from the state. And supposedly it was pretty easy to tell that she, you know, Rita didn't really go to extremes to make it look like a good document. You know, sometimes when people are trying to cover their tracks, they really work hard at making the fake invoices look legitimate, but supposedly Rita didn't. So that would have been something that might have been easy to tell.
Everybody has to stay vigilant and be watchful for what's going on for their clients and in their organizations. And so, Beth Marr, thank you very much for joining us. I enjoyed it very much and hope that you all listening did as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.